Welcome to the Immigrant Stories Program. I'm your host, Walter Gallagher, and my interview today is with Lucia Campbell. Lucia was born Lucia Ponce in Nicaragua in 1972, a tumultuous time for her country. That year, a massive earthquake destroyed 90% of Managua, the nation's capital, and marked the beginning of the end for Anastasio Somoza's dictatorship. The Nicaraguan Revolution that followed finally gave underserved Nicaraguan children like Lucia a chance to go to school. It was in eighth grade that Lucia discovered her love of teaching. That was where she took part in her country's national literacy campaign, and she's been teaching adults and children ever since. This year marks her 15th at Glenwood Springs Middle School, where she helps immigrant children learn a new language, find their voice, and summon the courage and confidence to tell their stories. Lucia Campbell, thanks for joining me for Immigrant Stories. You've been teaching English for 21 years.
Yes, so I started at Basal Elementary School, and I taught in a bilingual program there. And after that, I moved here to Glenwood Springs, and in Glenwood, Glenwood Springs Middle School, I've been teaching for 15 years.
Well, explain the kind of English that you teach.
So at the middle school, I teach English language development, which is students who come new to the country from zero English to level six, and I mainly work with levels 1, 2, 3 out of six.
So what's involved? It's English language development. You're taking kids who have just arrived and have no clue about English and helping them.
Yes. So what's involved? So the first things is, besides English, is social. A lot of it is getting used to the new school and getting to know our school routine. And our program is based on literacy, which means we learn in context from reading at the level, and we go from there. Instead of learning basic vocabulary words, we learn in context with reading.
So you take the words that they might be familiar with and build on that rather than just words that come out of a textbook.
Right, and we use their first language a lot as a base, so they using the skills that they can transfer into the new language, like cognates, which are words that are similar in both languages.
Yeah, there's a lot of Spanish words that English has adopted, right?
Right. And I always tell them, look at how many words you know already, like that you didn't know you know. And that's how we start, basically.
So this school, the Glenwood Middle School, is an expeditionary school. Can you explain what that means?
Right. So about 3-4 years ago, we started this new journey with EL schools. And what EL is, basically, is a very student-centered learning. It's very project-based learning. And the idea is that the learning is relevant to the student, but it's also a service to the community. So with our project, for example, our guiding question was, can sharing our stories help to change the stereotype that we see in our communities? So when the students share the stories, like understanding why they move here, what are the real reasons why they're here, it might make you think twice about, or if you didn't know why, there are many reasons why these kids come here.
Using the power of storytelling to try to help change people's attitudes or help people understand who may not.
Right. The understanding is key, because a lot of times we just have those prejudgments because we just don't know.
Yes.
And when you don't know, you have fear and you're just wondering based on just not having knowledge.
And you make assumptions that can create barriers.
Right.
Yeah.
And the kids know that. The thing is, the kids know that. They encounter it. And so for them, it's meaningful to attempt to do that.
Yes.
Because it's something they see, it's something they experience.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to the Immigrant Stories Program. And my interview today is with Lucia Campbell. Lucia began teaching as a teenager in Nicaragua, where she took part in her country's literacy campaign. Today, she's helping young immigrants at Glenwood Springs Middle School adjust to a new country and learn how to express themselves in English and Spanish. How do you use language to help children learn, but also act as a community service? The community service is trying to help change attitudes. How do you do that?
Right. So the kids, because of the language levels, we structure the stories and based on many stories we read. We read so many stories from adult immigrants from all over the world. We'll read some other for children all over the United States from different countries. And then based on those stories, the process starts with, okay, so do you relate to this story? Who do you relate to? What? And it's a reading process before we start writing.
Some of these kids have come from traumatic places, and they've experienced really, right. really traumatic things for a kid of their age. And yes. they may be reluctant to talk about it. I mean, it's one thing to try to learn English and write your English story, but I would imagine that some kids are afraid to bring all of those bad things, those traumatic things up.
Yes, it was quite a journey, but the reading the examples help a lot, because then it makes the kids understand, like, you're not on this alone. So we start the reading without me knowing the details of what their life was about. Of course, growing up in Nicaragua, I know where they come from. Honduras, for example, is our neighboring country to the north in Nicaragua, and I know the laws in Honduras are very difficult if people are trying to find protection. The police is not very reliable, and the kids share some of that. And so that's pretty frustrating, because crime happens and you cannot rely on law enforcement.
Then law enforcement doesn't respond, or if they do respond, they may be associated with those that did the crime.
They don't respond, and I know that because my family, my mom still lives in the northern Nicaragua, and there is a lot of crime in Nicaragua sometimes caused by Hondurans. Hmm. And Nicaragua's law enforcement system is a lot better in the sense that they will follow through a court case. But a lot of times they try as hard as they might to get felons from Honduras. You cannot get the law enforcement from Honduras to collaborate.
So these kids are carrying that. That's quite a weight. How do you help them open up and reassure them that they're in a safe place?
So before I even started this project, back to school night back in September, I met with all the parents and I explained them all in detail what the project was going to entail. I told them I understood their fears, and if they had an opposition to something on the stories, they could let me know. I also let them know that the kids' names will not be published, and they will have a choice of just using their first name or choose a pseudonym. And I think parents were pretty open about it. They were really responded well to the idea that the point of the project is to educate people, because a lot of times we get judged on all these misconceptions. One thing that was pretty important to me was that this process starts at school, and I wanted the kids to feel embraced, to feel that their story were embraced in our classrooms and in our schools too. So to get to that, with the help of Voices. So Voices is this community organization that work with schools to support the work we do, giving students a voice and an opportunity to publish. So what Voices was helpful was one on providing community volunteers, community experts is what we call them. Two of them came to tell their story, to share their story live with the whole school. We presented the stories with the idea that we all have a story to tell. And so these two people who shared their stories told the kids, this is my story, what's your story? Before the immigrants came to, or adult immigrants came to tell us their stories, we have lessons and the crews. So every teacher has a crew.
So that you call these work groups crews. That's part of the language of the expeditionary school, right?
Yes.
Right.
Yes. So in crew, before we went into these assemblies, we explore lessons on identity, like who you are and what do other people think you are versus who you think you are, and other lessons about immigration on the map, like we call it tracing my roots, and it can be your great-grandparents or where you come from, and we trace it on the map. It, just to build another understanding that we all came from somewhere at some point, and we have differences, but we also had similarities. So going with that understanding, the kids were more perceptive of the stories. When they came to listen to the stories, they were prepped in a way to be receptive of, this is a story I might not be familiar with. It might be very different of mine, but I can also tell mine. And then after we listened to the stories, we handed these kids this bracelet that says, what's your story? And we send them with a message of like, because now in your crew, you're going to share your story.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to the Immigrant Stories Program. My interview today is with Lucia Campbell, who's explaining how she uses a program called Expeditionary Learning to enlist the whole community in the education of immigrant students at Glenwood Springs Middle School. You must watch students just kind of blossom. I mean, that's a cliche, but to see a student open up from a traumatized and scared person to being more confident.
It was incredible how empowered they felt, how proud they were. Like at first, the thought that they were going to be on stage telling their story, it was a fear that I cannot describe. They were like, what? They were like, I'm not going to just present it to my parents. And I said, well, we'll practice and you'll be ready. And the night of the presentation, they were all dressed up. And they were so ready to go. They tried their very best. I was impressed myself to see them perform. And then the next day, this really, really summarized the project for me and the significance. I had a student that whose dad almost didn't come to the presentation because he was working. And then he tells me, like, I need you to talk right before the presentation. He told me, I need you to speak to my dad because he's not sure he can come, and I've been telling him it's important that he comes. And I said, yeah, let me talk to your dad. It wasn't dad, it was mom, and I said, so I tell mom, it's really important that he comes, and I hope he can come. And so then she passed me the husband to the phone and said, so what is it? What is it that you guys are doing? And I said, well, he's going to be presenting his story on the stage in English. You are his audience. I was hoping you could make it there. And because it sounded to me that he could make it work, and he was just wasn't sure. It wasn't a definite no. And then he came. So the same kid, the next day, he comes to me and said, like, my parents really like my story. And they want to know when are we going to present our next project. Like he was ready for another performance.
Let's do this again. Some of these kids have been through some of the trauma that we've read in our papers too, hasn't it?
Right. So a lot of these kids, especially from Honduras and Guatemala, I mean, these kids have no choice. They had to leave. The situation is so horrible that I never knew it can be so awful, so dramatic. So when they come at the border is... my understanding is they get separated by age groups. So even if they are siblings, like middle school kids go to one group and elementary school kids go to another group. And then if you have younger kids, they go to different groups. And then adults, if it is a couple even, they separate. So mm-hmm. everybody gets separated. And so I can't imagine, like, you come, these kids, like, walk for 21 days, go buses, walk, rides and car, whatever it was, 21 days. Then you get there and everybody gets split up. I mean, eventually they reunited and they were fine. But at first that was...
That's traumatic.
It's pretty traumatic, like, for a little kid
Very
to know,
traumatic.
Like, I can't see anybody.
Yeah, it happened to my father when he was a little boy. He was sent back to Scotland, and he still talked about it, even as a man in his 80s.
Wow.
So separation as a child is a very traumatic thing.
And these kids, one thing that inspired me, too, is these kids are so resilient. Like, so resilient after all that, you would think they'll be bitter or misbehaving or rude. You never see that.
Yeah.
They're always smiling. And they have ways to cope. Like, it amazed me. Like, they are happy kids in general. They want to learn. So when I asked them, from their perspective, I said, well, the separation of the border, because I was particularly curious, when you hear in the news how
yes.
terrible and awful it is. And they'll say, like, yeah, we were in those cages for like 2 days, but then they send you to this children's home. And the children's home is more...
an orphanage.
Right. But they actually don't complain about those, because they have, after all that law they passed about their rights and their minimum hours and having school, they actually tell them a little bit of English. They have an hour to go play sports. And they actually made friends, and some of them say in their stories, when they were ready to leave, like when they were finally released, they were a little bit sad to leave their new friends that they made there.
Well, they were fleeing danger that we can't even describe. So being held at the border may have felt somewhat secure, you know, in
right.
a way.
When you get to that children's home, it feels a new normal after you go through
yeah,
that. And
maybe
then
I'm safe here.
Right, you meet people. Different people, and then you got a schedule, and you got meals that are more closer to what you might eat at your home.
You're a child from a country that has experienced, you're from Nicaragua, you've experienced trauma and the upheaval in your country, so you must see yourself in these children.
Right, and growing up in Nicaragua, it was difficult, but it was a different situation. Sure, I can relate to trauma, but when we were growing to upheaval in the revolution in Nicaragua, we were also clear on the goal was a good future, a better future for everybody. I knew that as a child, and as I grew up older, I understood that and valued that. So I think that whatever the trauma was, it kind of compensated or to see the positive in it instead of the negative. Because Nicaragua, that revolution was pretty powerful. Like Nicaragua's countryside illiteracy was like 95%. And the government goal, number one, was literacy. Because in the old system, when 10 families own the country, and the schools are only available to these people, private
right.
schools, really. So we were, the way I came to terms with that, like, we lived all that so we can have schools. Because if that change never happened, people like me will never have school.
Yeah.
Will never. Like, my parents went to sixth grade education in their time, but their family had enough to pay a private school. But otherwise, they would not know. And so my parents were one of those few people in the countryside that would know how to read.
So sixth grade was quite an accomplishment, you know, given that you were basically peasants and, you know, indentured sort of servants on the land for those folks who ran the country.
Right. So the because to these 10 families, there were these 10 families who most likely live in Miami, and they have this property that run by Nicaraguans, and these Nicaraguans had worked there all their lives, their children and their grandchildren, as soon as they could work, and they have a right to food and clothing. That was it. Uh-huh. They own nothing. So, but the Nicaraguans have a saying. They say there is no bad thing that will last 40 years or 100 years. And then it been 40 years then, and people say enough. And the government came in and it took all that, but they redistributed wealth, which is not popular with these 10 families. But it made grandparents who have worked all their lives for food and clothing to own their own land they could farm and
a little bit of democracy.
Have a life. Yes. Yes,
for everyone. Well, now these students have, they've been through this process where they've heard other people's stories. They've told their own. They've been reinforced with videos and getting up and making those scary presentations. No one likes to get up in front of a group. I can't imagine how hard it would be.
Right. And, you know, against the resiliency that they have, because when I originally planned the project, I was not expecting everybody to go up there. I was very conscious of, like, some kids are not going to. And that was the purpose of the videos, too, because I thought those kids who don't feel comfortable, we will just show the videos with the subtitles. Yeah. That was my plan. But when I asked them, I said, well, so we need to sort this out. Like, we have an hour. That's our policy to school. We make these events an hour and no longer. And I said, so we need to decide, like, who is presenting, who's reading. Because some of them memorize their stories and ready to present. And some of them, we're just going to have to read them. And so I expected to have a group ready to present, a group ready to read, and a group like, not for me, show my video. And then, but they, some of them say, like, well, that's kind of not fair. If some of us are presenting and some others are not. I said, well, yeah, I get that. I said, but I also don't want to force you to go up there. And so kids that were a little bit more reluctant after that, I said, you know what, let's just all present. Let's just do it. And then it came from them.
That was Lucia Campbell. Lucia's students' stories will be published in early March in the Post-Independent, along with a story about this community-based program. Lucia wanted to thank the community that made this project successful. And rather than put words in her mouth, let me just read what she sent me. She writes, "It takes a village to make good things happen. I am first and foremost grateful for my students' inspiring resilience and the enthusiasm they bring to class every day. Thanks to their families who supported this project from the beginning and honored all of the children with a celebration of learning potluck. I'm also thankful for all my supportive colleagues at Glenwood Springs Middle School. But a special thanks to my principal, Joel Hathaway, for introducing me to the Amplify Voices program and encouraging me to collaborate with them. Thanks to Renee Prince, Amplify Voices Executive Director, who helped me bring the community into my classroom. Through Renee, I met immigrant storytellers Samuel Bernal and Amanda McCammett, who modeled what a good live immigration narrative looks like for the whole student body. Renee also introduced me to Vanessa Porras, who guided my students through visual journaling. Thanks to Alia Howe from Performing Arts Umbrella for coaching students on good stage presence and performance. Thanks to Beth Weissen from KDNK Community Access Radio and the Andy Zanka Youth Empowerment Program for recording these stories for radio. Thanks to Ben Bonfalk, Roaring Fork School District's technology expert, for taking the time to answer my technology questions. And before we go, I would like to thank Lucia Campbell for her dedication to student learning and her passion for teaching, which started when she was a teenager, teaching her fellow Nicaraguans how to read and write. Lucia was born on December 31st, 1972, the same day baseball legend Roberto Clemente, died in a plane crash loaded with earthquake relief supplies that he'd gathered to bring home to his people of Nicaragua. Roberto Clemente was elevated to sainthood in most homes in Nicaragua. In fact, Lucia's dad always joked about naming her Roberta. And a Roberto Clemente quote was framed and hung on her family's living room wall. It said, "Anytime you have an opportunity to make a difference in this world, and you don't, then you're wasting your time on earth." You've been listening to the Immigrant Stories program. For more on immigrant stories, go to our website, immigrantstories.net, or subscribe to Immigrant Stories wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.